Hello and welcome to Promenade Culture Center. This is Culture Corner. Our guest today is Lidia Yanakievska, architect and interior designer. Lidia, very warm welcome to Culture Corner.
Thank you.
We're happy to have you here and to discuss your large body of work and your experiences in Kuwait. And let us delve immediately with the question, when did you first come to Kuwait and how did that happen?
I came to Kuwait just before the invasion of 1990, and I came with a company from, at that time, Yugoslavia, because I was born and then educated in Yugoslavia and part of it in US. And then we got a big job here, which I was coordinator on the job because I speak English fluently, and being an architect. And it was a year job, and then... They offered me a job here. I said, no, it was just before, about this time of the year. I said, no, I'm going back. That's it. Then when I went back, I said, that is a challenge. Mm-hmm. Let me see, because it's completely different environment. It's a different way it is working. The offices are different than how it was at that point set up in Yugoslavia. So I said, I'm curious to check. Mm-hmm. And I'm mother was objecting. She said, why you're leaving a secure job? I said, listen, I just want to see what more I can do than just work in this company at this position. And a lot of people were wondering why I'm taking a challenge. It was a challenge for me.
Yes, of course.
And probably I wanted to see what more I can do as an architect and to explore the region. There was literally a challenge. And I came just before the invasion. It was a few months then the invasion happened. My daughter was little. It was also an issue that my daughter could learn English when we are in a foreign country and she has to go to a foreign school. So I said, let's see, why not? Maybe a few years, that will be fine. And then the invasion happened. We all went back. Then after the invasion, again, the company where they called me, they asked if I am intending to come back. One of the reasons was my daughter, she said, I want to go to my school in Kuwait. So both together, I think that was it. I said, okay, few years, we'll go, that's it. And those few years are still going on.
Yes, quite a number now. And do you remember your first impressions? I'm sure you do, of Kuwait, of culture, of people, of...
It was much smaller. I mean, yes, it was... pleasant to see that people were welcoming, very welcoming. I mean, is it the business people or the private people? Of course, being with a foreign company, it was different than working for a local company. But in a way, it was interesting. First, always they would look at you in your room and do, are you a good architect, not good architect, and all that. But in any way, I felt very welcome somehow. I was always invited to the houses, maybe because I was a woman, so it was easier to invite you in the house than if you're a man. And I found that amazing in a way. And they want to show you the welcoming. They want to show you the food. They want to show you the customs. And then, you know, what are the sweets and what is the jewelry and this and that, which was always very interesting. And for me, it was challenging and intriguing because as an architect, you have to know those things in order to design something that will be suitable for the city and for the region.
And those first impressions of architecture, I first want to ask you about landing on Kuwait Airport. It was still the old airport at the time.
It was the old airport, and it was much nicer. It was before they extended it, not in a very proper way. Mm. It was still Kenzo Tange. It was, you know... not everything that Kenzo Tange designed as a famous architect, but it was pretty much beautiful. It was completely different.
Yeah, very, very
beautifully,
subtle,
very settled, very elegant.
Very minimal it felt.
Yes, it was beautiful. The finishes inside, the departure, the arrival, how it was, where was the duty-free, was on the upper level, where are the now the lounges. And it was completely different. I mean, much, much nicer. Of course, smaller. I mean, there were much less flights. Kuwait was smaller as a city. And I mean, for example, Sixth Ring Road didn't exist. Oh. Fifth was the new thing and it was in construction. Fourth was the last big one. Fifth was opened
at
that time.
Those were the boundaries of the city.
Those were the boundaries. And It was not that crowded, of course. I mean, not that many cars, not that many local population. Kuwait is not that many foreigners. I think, I mean, approximately it was 50% of what is now as a population. So it made a huge difference. There were no big, huge shopping malls. The shopping was mainly downtown. Mutanna, Al-Mutanna complex was the sort of the up-and-coming complex, and it was very popular. And all around Mutanna and the old souks, of course, because for us that was the interesting part. But then even in the world at that time, still the mega malls were not there, except in the States. I know them because I studied in the States. So, and I was never a very big fan of the huge malls. I mean, at that time, which was different. But then it was interesting. And in the souk was interesting. People were welcoming. And they would notice that you're a foreigner. And they, would you like to see? Would you like tea? It pretty much reminded me a little bit of a sense of the big old souk in Istanbul. Okay. The market, mm-hmm. the covered market. Kapalı Çarşı, which is called. And we have some of the old markets in the Balkans too. So it was interesting and curious, you know. So it was different approach to architecture, of course. Mm. I mean, especially depends what you're doing. I mean, is it a public building? Is it housing?
How about this first project that you were doing? In which area were they? I mean, not area as in location, more like what were you doing those
housing,
first days?
The beginning was housing, either residential, individual, or mainly or housing as a residence buildings. And it was interesting, you know, to see what are they looking for, how the space is designed and shared, which is very different than Europe. Of course, and then, I mean, first of all, the spaces are much bigger. Then you always have the support staff, which are maids and servants, and all those relationships and how it works and, you know, the kitchens and. So it was interesting to learn those things, you know. I remember one of my colleagues back home, he said, are you dealing with a total design? I said, not per se, but I mean, you know, it's a different way of total design and you have to deal with it. And then you have to talk to the clients, you know, and understand what they want, like everywhere in the world, definitely. And I remember two couples specifically, one of them, she said, oh, no, I'm not cooking. My husband wants the kitchen. And for me, it was surprising because usually they say the men are not involved in the house, which is not the case. I know a lot of men here who do cook and love cooking. So he said, yeah, she doesn't cook. I cook. The kitchen is my kingdom. And she really didn't involve at all of what is designed and how it is set up and what are the equipments and all that. And then another one, she said, no, he doesn't want, because usually the older version of new houses, of Kuwaiti houses, where there is external kitchen and there is interior kitchen or pantry or open kitchen. So he said, no, I don't want to. My wife cooks. I don't want the maids to cook for me. So, you know, you face those things.
You have to answer them.
You understand the society and you understand what they look. I mean, I had even a client who said, I want a fireplace. And for me at that point, very early on, I said, why would you like a fireplace? Even when it's extremely hot outside, I come home, I put the maximum, the AC, and I'll put the fireplace just to calm down.
Yeah.
They said, okay.
Whatever makes sense for people, in their homes.
Yeah, it was mainly housing. And then I think I always loved the residential and housing because I loved interior design. And even when I studied both. And I find it always easier to design completely. Because as an architect, you know exactly what comes next. You don't have to do it just architecturally, and then the interior designer doesn't know what to do or how to change the place to adapt the things, to adapt how the bathroom will be, for example, or where the kitchen will be and how that will be developed.
It sounds like the settling in was going nicely for you in those first years.
It was. I think it was.
And given a small child.
Yeah. It was interesting, you know, and then the schools were very good. I mean, always, still are, I think. And although I don't have a child in school now, I cannot comment directly. But it was, in other words, was also, I think, very safe society. Yeah. So there was no worries about the children or worries about me driving in the night, for example, going to the airport to bring somebody or send somebody off. So the shopping was easy. The food is available, everything. I always remember one colleague of mine early on, what he commented to his family back home. He says, there is everything, even if you want pigeon milk, but pink is there. Yeah. So, you know, it's easy, I think, to settle. Mm-hmm. If somehow even the documents doing and all this
the paperwork around
paperwork
your,
around
yes.
the residence, mm-hmm. you know, was somehow much more easier, I simpler. Think, than today, or yeah. simpler, yeah. maybe because there were less foreigners. Mm. So I can't go into
the
details.
Whole system
it's not
worked,
my it was much
yeah.
more different, yeah.
yeah. And you're already mentioning some of the projects you were working on. What are some of the most memorable projects? I want to make sure that our listeners or people who are watching us understand that your career, as we have mentioned, has been here in Kuwait for quite a number of years, and that you have tackled very many different projects with different entities, within different companies. Of all of these, do you have like a candy project, something you truly enjoyed? And also, what were the most challenging ones? This is where we grow.
I think all of them were in some way from small to big challenging in mm-hmm. a way. Sometimes even one renovation, mm-hmm. you want to do something special is challenging of how to present to the owner and how to encourage them to change to something unusual mm-hmm. that is not seen. And for example, I have, and how to persuade the client that this is the correct thing to do. I'm a very straightforward person. I don't always say yes to the clients. That's one thing which always was my characteristics. And sometimes they're not happy, but on the end they are happy. Because I've sent once to the large client and said, why? But Lydia said, this is my house, my money. I said, by all means, but you're paying me to tell you what's correct. And I have to do that. Otherwise, I will miss my profession. I will not be true to me. So I said, I have to tell you then, by all means, you can do as you like. But I have to be honest. So from residential, I think the biggest one I have done was the renovation and addition of Shah Palace for at that time Crown Prince Sheikh Saad Al Abdallah.
We're very curious about Shah Palace. All of us driving
very
behind,
interesting,
yeah, past
yeah.
it, yeah.
And I mean, it made me to stay even friends with the family mm-hmm. up till today, which I find it as a really appreciation. And you know, we became like a family in a way. That's one of the things all over saying, how can you manage with big clients like that? But then they are also people. We are all humans. I mean, and if you are dealing with them in a proper way, that's fine. They are not something that you can't deal with them. Mm-hmm. And that was from residential, besides lots of other houses and renovations and additions and all that, with, you know, trying to use this or that. Sometimes it's always, you know, a matter of budgets. And it's very interesting when people want something fantastic, but they don't want to pay. Or their budget, you know, they, even if they have money, they don't want to spend. So it's a challenge at how to do it and still to get a result that will satisfy you as a designer.
Yes, and them.
And
as clients,
them in
yeah.
the same time and satisfy their pocket or wishes of a pocket. Not necessarily they don't have the money, but maybe they don't want to spend. So, you know, the Kuwait, I found one thing, I find a very interesting society. They're shrewd businessmen and they're very good mm-hmm. in it. Women, both women and men. And they know what they want to do and how much they want to spend. So it's interesting. It's mm-hmm. interesting always, you know. I don't think we have that mindset. Mm-hmm. And as many years I'm here, I still my mind doesn't work like that. I wish it did. But then from big projects, I was lucky enough. I was doing one project for Chaldea Campus, huge auditorium, which was very interesting. I got an award in Europe for it,
for Kuwait University. Yes, and that won an award like you.
Yeah, yes. It won an award for design. Then I was working even on Shadadia campus at one period as a design review. One of the big projects also won an award for the facade was the Marina World, which is still standing, which was a very commercial project because it's a beauty project. Mm-hmm. So the owner doesn't want to spend enormous amount of money because, again, the financial part was more important for them than the design part. And it has a lot of, but I think it's still one of the nice malls standing, and it's very interesting. It was a big team, of course, not only me. And the Marina Mall, the Marina Crescent, the old Marina World, 3 kilometers by the seaside, and Marina Hotel as a last project. And that actually brought me later on more in touch with hospitality, which I'm still working a lot.
This is your current position.
Yeah,
is
my current
in
a... and long time in a way than a lot of other hotels, either here or in the region, in Egypt and around, which was interesting because I find it interesting to learn more of how it operates, how it works, what everything has to be considered. So I do... find myself as one of the sort of specialists as a designer for hospitality in the country, because I have worked on many projects, and being part of the management company, we do give technical assistance to anybody who wants to develop hotels or any of the hospitality projects, restaurants, etc., etc. So, you know, again, that's also always in line with the other parts of the hospitality. Is it the food and beverage? Is it the operation? It's not just how I want it to look like, but also how it will function and where it is. Is it by the sea? Is it in the city? Is it in the mountains? Is it somewhere else in the desert? So it's very, very different always. And sometimes it's very, very challenging how to achieve it when the owner doesn't want to spend. So,
you
anyway.
Did mention that you just mentioned that there are large teams in these operations. This is a teamwork,
yes,
even though
always.
Even when you are a lead architect on something. Yeah. And these occupations that require teamwork are very interesting to talk about because this is settling down so many different energies, knowledges, skills. And now that you have that you hold a position where you, I'm sure, run teams, how do you achieve that? How do you achieve a positive, good result?
I always say when you, first of all, architecture alone, very hard, anybody does. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would like to mention always the other people who mentioned, who work on the team. Mm-hmm. For example, even if I design something, I do the sketches. If a draftman is there who will draft it, that's already a small team. And I always tell them, even in the office or wherever, I said, listen, it's never I, it's we. Even that tea boy who brings us coffee or cleans the place, it's part of the team. Otherwise, we cannot function. Or the IT personnel or anybody else, or the 3D or the, you know, nowadays before it was manual. For example, when we were doing Marina project, which we worked on 5 years when I was in SSH, the whole team, we had a specialist person who came from abroad who was just always, all his life, doing presentation of images, sort of a 3D by hand, but like beautiful paintings, which look very real, you know. For me, much nicer than the AutoCAD or the 3D computer generated, which works very, looks very sterile. It's, yes, it's all very good to have all the technology, but the human touch, maybe I am the older generation, but the human touch and the human hand always adds to the profession and to the work, the artistic part. And I always tell the students, I said, you cannot be an architect if you cannot draw. You have to draw. So even when you make a sketch, that sketch makes a life. That's why it was developed, even one of the softwares to work with, to sort of, if you draw it as AutoCAD, to transform it to look like it's hand sketch. Because it looks nicer, it's softer. So, you know,
more appealing.
I see even my colleagues, even my daughter says, keep your sketches, they're beautiful, they're nice. I said, yeah, I do like them. And, you know, it's interesting to see at any point, how did you think and what did you do with it and how you came up with some detail. And then even now, I mean, unfortunately here, they're not that much oriented to keep those things. And even back in our countries, to be honest, but I admire when I go to London to V&A, how they keep in the drawer sketches from architects which are 50 years old, 100 years old, 200-300 years old, because sometimes it shows you a little sketch how the idea came around to do
it. I think because we come from originally from the same country, I listened to a very interesting podcast with Mila Turajlić, who spoke about, because she did these beautiful films on Algerian war for liberation, and looking into the documentation rooms and archives, she found so many on different countries when Yugoslavia used to send its personnel, photographers, videographers, to help various Asian African countries develop the identity, the story behind the identity. Countries. Yes. And that was extremely interesting to me. This is still kept somewhere. I think this documentation is one of the most important jobs we actually have while we're creating something.
It is. It's very important, but that's why I'm saying that's what the British were good at. They were recording everything wherever they went. Were they the colonial power or not, or just visiting? They were excellent in that, and they keep the records. They keep copies of contracts. They keep copy of somebody's notes. And that's excellent, because that's how we learned, actually, how the history was changing and what was brought up around, or which tools were used, you know, even how something was constructed. And if you want to, for example, repair things, you need that to see how it was done. I have some old copies of books which my uncle gave me when I was studying for detailing, which are probably done just after the Second World War or something like that. And they're very interesting to see how was the experience brought up from before the wars and after the wars, and when the technology started changing, and then how those details still can work if we little bit adapt them into something. And people were much more cautious to be correct. And one thing which I found it different when I came to work was we are educated in DIN system, which is the European system or German standards. Well, everything here is British standards. It's a very different way of how you design and how to approach the main design, which is interesting. But you adapt. That's not a problem at all. I mean, to adapt to that. Still, some of the things I don't like how they're done, but that's the standards, how they're adapted.
And you apply your skills and your knowledge and your ways. And I think that's a good mix.
Accordingly, and that's interesting.
You have mentioned your role as an educator. We just mentioned the Kuwait University. I'm very curious about this role, because not just here at the center, but and for me personally, educators are the carriers of so many futures. How do you do it? What is your path as an educator? What do you believe in? What do you teach your students?
I have a lot of colleagues there, and then how it came at one point, they needed somebody to do the design studios, and I found it is they invited me to be part of the design studio, and it was interesting, you know. At that time, they had also some foreign, one Italian lady who was part of the team there, and also one Chinese lady, Chinese American, who was also dean at the time. So it was interesting, you know, to see this, how it works. And they were inviting me usually for sort of reviewing the projects, being a practicing architect, because you know the practical part of the country or the standards or of the wishes of people. So in a way to transfer the knowledge. And I always find it fascinating. everybody was telling me, why you waste time? I said, it's not a waste of time. I always said that whatever we have to pass the experience to the future generations. Otherwise, our roles will be not fulfilled.
Diminished, yes.
And if I don't give my experience, what's the point of having it? I don't think that we shouldn't do that. I think we should do that. And then invited me, and I was there for like 4 semesters. And it was interesting to see because, and it was funny, you know. Mm-hmm. I had one of the studios when we were finishing, first of all, they were looking at me like, you know, what she's going to do, because I'm quite loud when I talk. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, no, you cannot do this. You have to do like this. You have to take care of these things and, you know, all this. And on the end, they came to me, are you going to teach us next semester? I said, I don't know. Depends on the schedule. Mm-hmm. We want you to come. I said, you were. And then one of the students told me, said, on the beginning, we were all scared from you. I said, why? Because you were intimidating. I said, mm-hmm. I didn't know that I'm intimidating. He said, we thought what you will do now, you will kill us with our homeworks and this and that.
Yeah.
But he said, we learned from you. Mm. And I said, that's the point. That's what I want you to learn, because that's why you're here. And I said, I have one advantage. I'm not just a professor or educator per se, theoretical. I have experience. So I'm telling you from experience the things, how you do or how you don't do.
Useful and sometimes very rare, because educators, professors sometimes just stay in theory medical colleges, in these that's technical the colleges, and that's a big issue.
Especially in the, again, I'm seeing this, the system as American system here, they have perfect education. They go to the best universities in the world. They do their masters and PhDs. All of it is fantastic. But then a lot of them have never designed. And if you don't design, if you don't sit on the table and, you know, start sketching
start
and doing
from zero,
and understanding how it works, again, to coordinate with the investor and with the authorities and with the standards, it's a very different thing. So
two worlds, basically.
It's in a way two worlds. Mm. And sometimes it's nice to tell the students, you know, what all can happen on the path of design. Because, you know, again, I said, sometimes I used to challenge them. I said, okay, let's say I am the owner. So I'll tell you, I don't like this because it doesn't work for me, because this has to be like that or like that. My kitchen is not good. I said, you cannot design just how you like. Mm-hmm. You have to talk to the client, I said. And that's the best way. You really have to understand them, because I usually say even to clients like that, I said, house is for you, not for me. And I said, what we do as architects is to transfer your wishes in the best possible way. Because you're going to live, not me. If it is for me, I'll design it differently.
We have a lot of collaborators, a lot of our associates, instructors who are architects by education, mm-hmm. who don't work, obviously, for us as architects. Okay. And it feels to me, maybe I'm just exposed to that part of the population, that every third person is an architect. A lot of artists went into architecture. Do you see this at college, at university? Do you see these people who are there for wrong reasons?
Similar to what we had in Yugoslavia, mm-hmm. because the education is sort of free, yes. to a certain extent. They have to have, of course, the quota.
Yes,
to enter. But then there is a lot more girls than boys because of the cultural issues. Some of the girls, the parents won't let them study outside, even if they get accepted. Mm-hmm. Or they will let them later on for a master's and PhD, but not on the beginning. And in a way, they all go. And it was same when I was studying, and I think it's same all over the world. Mm. Architecture has one advantage. You can do so many things when you graduate. I mean, it's sort of like applied art. Mm-hmm. That's how I, in a brief, say it, because you have to be artistic, but also you have to know the technicality.
Now that we're talking about it, I'd like us to go back. into you choosing architecture as your studies. Okay. And we did speak to a few architects here and asking them, did this stem from childhood? Did you know about this occupation? How did it come to be that you chose architecture as your...
It was funny enough, we had in the eighth grade in school, by the end of the school year, because we were going like to high school, we had to do an essay, elementary, eighth grade. So we had to do an essay about what we want to do in future. Mm-hmm. I was good in drawing. And it was interesting because I had the same teacher which my mother had in the past, which was funny. And then my brother had him. He was an older gentleman who was very cute and very traditional in teaching art. But then I liked it. And then I wrote an essay how I would like to be an architect to do houses for people, to make their homes nicer. And I was always doing that even in the house. And my parents were brave enough to let me do things even before I studied architecture. For example, painting the rooms, etc. And at one point, I remember my father told me the truth. I wanted to mix the colors. And at that time, it was not usual to have darker colors or solid colors. They used to make the white color, put a little bit of something else just to have a very, very, very pale colors and white ceilings. I came with a strong color and made the ceiling and the walls all one color. And then the painters went to my father, tell him, listen, are you sure she knows what she's doing? And he told them, I promised. Let her do it. You paint it. If it's not good, we will repaint.
But that's
but
a great
then they business. Liked it. Yeah. And so it was, you know, exactly the neighborhood was looking at it. So it somehow gives you courage to go ahead, you know, because they were encouraging me to do that.
Yes, a lot of it comes from family support, which is so, so crucial for young beings. And this is exactly actually what I wanted to ask you, whether that support came from family as well. Did it come from an environment? So if I'm not mistaken, at the time when you were in high school, if I remember well how history of education went, you would have to choose just
science or humanities.
Humanities,
I went to sciences always because I liked science anyway.
And this prepared you in a way for your studies.
And then I went to the States and then I came back. I continued in Yugoslavia, which was fine. And it was very interesting because you get both sides, you know.
And you got to work at a time where it was still thriving in a way.
Yes. It was starting to change, but it was still thriving. Yeah.
But you were... I don't want to use the word wise, but it was clear to you that times are changing.
Yes.
And that it is necessary to serve.
Because I said to my mother when I was leaving, she said, why you're leaving? Why you're leaving the job? As I told you, I said, listen, this is collapsing. I can see it. And everybody after that said, you saw it ahead of time.
It's interesting how a lot of people didn't see it coming.
No, they were somehow persuaded that it will overcome, that it will go back to all normal and all that. Maybe because I went to the States and I was educated partially there. And then I came back and, you know, even when I came to Kuwait, again, you see from completely different point of view the reality of society.
That is so necessary.
And that's maybe that helped me a lot.
Understand.
In a way, that was one of the issues. And another issue is I wanted to give to my daughter a little bit experience of another society, which I think was very helpful. And I mean, it helped her in her career immensely.
As an architect, how do you grow? Obviously from experiences, from work, but also you were mentioning searching other fields, how you must know other fields as well and be competent in them to be an architect. But what is...
The architects, I always say, usually, it was interesting, I always commented, when you are in a sort of a group of doctors, they talk only about medicine. And you go crazy with it when they talk only about it. Architects talk of so many things because, for example, even when we study, you have to design a house, you have to design a hospital, you have to design a factory as part of the works. You know, you have to design so many things, studio maybe, hotel, residential, theater, museum. So in order to do that, you have to learn things. Mm. You have to research a little bit, you know, to go and visit things and places, to talk to the users. And I think they have to be much more open-minded. And I always encourage the young generation. I said, go travel, see. And I was lucky enough, my parents traveled a lot and we traveled with them. So, you know, you see different cultures, you see different cities, you see how and why things were like this or like that, or why they changed or why they evolved. And why, let's say, the Balkans are, even the Balkans are different from south to north, and let alone Europe, let alone other countries. I mean, Middle East is different, mm. etc. Asia is different. So it always was interesting for me. I'm a curious person, per se. So you have to learn and you have to read. You cannot just say, no, this is like that and that's it.
Yes, yes.
So but like in every, I think...
Oh, that's in every line of job, I think.
But
yes.
Especially architecture. And I always used to say to the students, even my nephew, when he started, I said, listen, architecture, you have to love it. Mm. If you don't love it, it's very hard. If you just think how much money you will make for this job, don't do it. Mm. You really have to love it because you will never be paid for the effort you put, mm. you know, on equally. You cannot say, I spent here 2 hours, you have to pay me 2 hours. You will spend 10 hours to be paid for 2 hours. It's not a job you can lock the office and go home, and you can't lock your mind because you go home with your design. And if something doesn't go
you
sometimes,
reflect on it, you ponder,
you
yeah.
think about it. And very often, all through my work, I have taken things with me to sit down in the evening when it's quiet to solve it, mm-hmm. because in office somebody will call the phone, this, that, people will come in, somebody will ask, client will ask, so you lose your concentration. And it's important to do that, you know, and to look through things when you travel, to see things, to be curious in a way.
When we first met, you and I, we met in an exhibition.
Yes.
And you said you were an architect, but you immediately shared a lot of stories related to culture, arts, heritage. We exchanged mm-hmm. a few points and opinions. And now you're adding to that story by saying how important it is for your initial job as well. Yeah. I wanted to ask you what you enjoy in Kuwait in terms of culture and arts. If you have a favorite building that we must visit, something mm-hmm. that's... both related to your job, but it's also embedded in culture and even artistic.
Kuwait is very, very interesting. And it's interesting how it developed. Of course, mm-hmm. the oil era changed a lot of things and unfortunately demolished a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But that's what it is now. And now there is a big awareness of the younger generation, the yes. middle age or younger generation architects to sort of collect information, at least what it was, or somehow register the things, because it was not a society that were registering things. It's a verbal society. Mm. They were transferring stories and, you know, verbally to the younger generation. But in the same time, it's interesting how it was changing from before the invasion till after. Mm-hmm. And there were art galleries always. Some of them closed down, new opened up, etc. There are museums which a lot of them still have to be renovated, like the Natural History Museum, etc., etc. A lot of money is put into the cultural centers as you see them
yes,
nowadays,
yes,
which is good. Yes, there are comments from all sides of corners, but then there is for every project, there are comments in the world. For example, even in London, Millennium Dome was done. It was praised and celebrated. Then they were cursing it because it was not making money in a way. So, you know, you will always have in the society, yes, plus or minuses. It's still, there are, you know, polarized issues in the society. Some people think that it should be much more closed, much more conservative. Some people think it's not enough modernized and conservatives. But then I think that you find it in every society.
Yes, definitely.
More and less. Mm-hmm. And you have different parts of the societies in every country. And I'm a person who always looks at the good side, not at the bad side of
positive
the things.
Side.
Positive side and better to look at that side and help that side thrive. The good thing is that because the country was investing into education and a lot of kids were sent abroad to study in the best universities possible, they actually have a lot of talents who are ready to be used or being used in the different cultural institutions, and they're wonderful into it. Of course, a lot more has to be done still, and a lot more. Again, maybe not. Maybe it was a wrong way to be just westernized. It shouldn't be westernized. I don't agree with that.
Yes.
It should be developed in a way what the culture is of the
natural
of the,
progress.
Of the,
oh, yes.
Yes, because we all have you know, something to talk about and say
and
about it, and
to,
maybe and
to
give
offer.
And something to offer and something to show to the world. So there are many buildings. There are many. So I'm a member of Dar al-Atar, for example, Al Islamia, for long years. Beautiful lectures every week. I mean, I have learned so much about the Islamic architecture and
their cultural
and
program
art
is
all that.
Yeah.
Yes, and they are having more than just lectures and musical evenings and this, that, and all sorts of things. And they're doing also some tutoring and instructions. And so that's one of the institutions. There are many more. Then there is Sadhu House. Then there is Scientific Center, mm-hmm. which, yes, maybe there are some issues, plus minus, how they are running the things. But still, there is things
the offer
to go
is
and
there.
See. There is
yes.
offer is there. And there is many, many individual, let's say, things started, let's say startups or art studios or centers like Yadawi, like Art Studio, like all these, which are interesting. And they're offering beautiful things to the
Many
younger generations.
Many independent initiatives, yes, are.
I mean, even the SIK Theater, which is, you know, staged in Kuwait, which
yes.
is very, very much sort of initiative of the teachers.
Yes.
And it came to a very, very, very good standard, which
oh, yes.
I love it.
Oh, yes, we're
and
all looking forward to their annual performances.
That one,
yes.
And then they have the comic nights, and then. So, and it's always full when you go there. So it means there is an interest,
yes.
There is a wish. Then artists, painters, there is many in Kuwait.
Yes, we are very aware of that here at the center. And it's about facilitating this creative
yes,
potential
true.
That will make that move, that change. I know that you are involved with the National Council in a professional role. And it feels that there is always something more that we can do, something more that can be done,
yes.
obviously through government
Definitely.
Framework,
yeah.
through private initiative, through individual initiative. And you gave us your thoughts on the cultural scene. I think with your work through students, through your own work, that you have a really good overview of the situation in Kuwait. Let's focus maybe on students for a moment. What is the best advice? You've shared some of them. What is the best advice you can give them? We talk a lot here about the individual responsibility we have for society,
yes.
whether we pick up trash behind us, whether we, you know, hold the door for someone, something as simple as that, to continuously giving through our work, sharing the knowledge, the skills, as you have mentioned before. What is that one maybe piece of advice that's crucial for anyone entering the field that affects so much?
Being that architecture or any other field, I would say be curious. Be you know, don't sit back and say, okay, I finished university and that's it. No, it's not that it. That's just the beginning. The any degree, whatever it is, diploma or degree or PhD or whatever, is just the beginning for anything. So never stop, because there is so much to learn. And of course, things are changing. I mean, technology is changing. Things are changing. Crafts are changing. Tools are changing. Everything. I mean, soon with AI. But there is one thing which scares me a little bit with all the technology, that the younger generation is avoiding books, read a lot, because all this culture through the centuries was recorded somewhere, and yes, novels were written, and all that, it's not a nonsense. It's important to do those things. And be curious, main thing, you know. I find it that I will be curious till end of my life, because you have to. Otherwise, I think you will just vegetate. I don't know. For me, it's not interesting. I have an aunt in London. She did her PhD when she was 70-something, when she retired, and she found a subject that she couldn't do it while she was working. And she did further, and then they said, oh, you should turn it into a book because it's interesting subject. Nobody touched it. And then, because I'm an architect, she took courses of Open University in England for architecture, just for information, not for a profession, or what it is. And to, so it's go and see. I always say architects should travel, should go and see things, and see how the difference is, first of climate or sun, or what is the difference. For example, here the difference of sunshine in the summer and winter is very different. The sun in the winter goes very low in the rooms, very deep, which we don't see it in the northern hemisphere. Here we are closer to the equator, so we have different winds, different sun exposure, different
everything.
I will
forever be obsessed with the moon.
The stars. That's why, I mean, they were perfect with stargazing and astronomers. They started the astronomy here. Because, you know, especially when you go in the desert, and if you're in, which is less and less quiet place in the desert, it's amazing, the sun, the night stars and the night sky, which is beautiful. And the quietness of the desert. That's amazing. I think that's why, which they are ruining it these days, but everybody wants in the winter to go to the desert in the camps and kashtas, so to say, because, I mean, we did kashta even in Marina Hotel, that one I created it, just to do something that people would like to sit down, sit outside, sort of go back in the, you know, in a very modern way to go back to the tradition.
I have to mention something that's not, it is not directly your work, but it is very much indirectly your work, and that is your daughter's book.
No.
I just, it was just presented and promoted in Kuwait, but a lot of things that you were saying in this past hour reminded me of, she has published a book on cuisine, on the Balkan cuisine.
And stories,
which is the main point actually of the book, because through a lot of them, while I was reading, what struck me was this diversity she was exposed to.
Yes,
that actually also made her realize better her own roots.
Exactly,
and this is something that
go back to the roots.
Yes. Appreciation for things, countries she has lived through. Yeah. New relationships she has formed, new heritage she has brought into her life. Mm-hmm. It's just, it's so well understood in this book. And she refers to how much of it was through you, what you were saying, about staying curious, about being adaptable, about being open to diversity.
Because you have to, you know, and that's how you are better in the place where you are at the moment. If you don't do that, if you're all the time negative and say, oh, I don't like this place, I'm not good, it's not good, it's not good.
Yes.
You actually ruin yourself with negativity. Yes. So, yes, if I have something why I want to do this, then I'm looking at the bright side, as they say. Look at the bright side, not at the dark side.
We're very happy here to really promote the good title, good book. The book is available at Zericraft, if I'm not mistaken. And I personally have it, and I'm so happy to read it, and so happy to make something. I'm actually very fond of kitchen.
That's good.
So I definitely, and my eldest child as well, we will attempt. I will report back. A lot of things you spoke about comes from your idea of actually inspiration for life.
Yeah.
And there are two things I like to ask. One is, where does your inspiration stem from, or how do you find it? The other side of it is, how do you rest? How do you find inspiration to work, but also how do you rest and are able to create again?
Again, it's always different, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I don't think there is a recipe per se.
No, it's different for everyone.
But it's different for everyone, and also it's different from case to case.
Yes.
You know, if you have for example, a project that you like and you achieved what you wanted without people interfering. Because again, let's face it, we are commercial architects. That's what I always say to the students. Mm-hmm. You can dream till you're studying, and you can create things that you would like to see. But very few of the architects can be Zaha Hadid or similar, not because they're not talented, all of them, but because they have to work and fulfill the requirements of the office or the company where they work. And sometimes you have to compromise because of so many reasons. There is not one reason why you have to compromise on a project or on a development. Mm. So that's why, I mean, the celebrity architects, they created this celebrity. Few of them, we know them in the world. And they are great, but also they are not easy. I have worked on a project here with Jean Nouvel. We did a cultural center and we won the competition, but it was never executed, so it stayed on the paper. It was not easy to work with him. And even his assistant, who was the financial and technical director of their company, he said he was fighting till the age of 50-something to make some money. Now he's a celebrity, now he wants to make money. He can. So, you know, I'm saying, although he's a fantastic speaker, he gave a lecture here at university, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. And other architects who have come, it was also lucky to meet all sorts of people here. And then either in the field or another field, like Richard Branson, et cetera, et cetera. But as I said, you know, you have to be curious and it's always, you know, sometimes my resting is to cook something. Sometimes my resting is to go to the beach. Depends, you know, I'll go and swim or just sit outside. Sometimes it's to read a book, and one day I don't want to look at the mobile at all. So it's always, you know, different.
It's a different thing for different occasions.
And I do like to travel still. I mean, which working with hospitality gave me that opportunity. Maybe that's why I shifted lately into it, because I didn't have obligation to take care of a family or something.
Yeah,
so, you know, it in a way, it gave me a chance to see from a different aspect and angle the countries that we usually see them as tourists only. Because, for example, going to Egypt as a tourist is one thing, but it's completely different to see the society and work with a society and see how it operates, and then see it in a different way, like every country.
Are some of your future plans, if you can share with us, some immediate plans you have professionally or maybe privately?
We'll see.
You are a very busy woman.
Well, I make myself busy, and I like to be busy because I don't think we should waste life. Mm. I don't find the way, you know, of wasting time for nothing. I always find myself what to do. When I was younger, I was doing my clothes myself and trying to do things. And then I did even for my mother and my daughter. And maybe one day when I slow down with architecture, I will go back to that.
Will
because
that
I enjoy
be?
That. Well, maybe. Yeah. We'll see. I will always, you know, advise people. I will always have friends who will ask for things, I'm sure. And I enjoy that. I don't mind it. It's I think it's a profession which is also like a hobby. So if you take it like that, then you're more successful. If you're just considering it that my job is from 8 to 4, no, it won't work. You will be a paper pusher only. And I can't afford to do that. I don't find it satisfying.
Lydia, thank you so much for the time you spent with us today. So many inspirational things, so many things to think about, so many things to attempt as you are sharing with your clients and with your students. I hope we get to see you back at Culture Corner at some point and discuss more. Discuss
more of left your some things not finished. We'll have to discuss more about some projects in Kuwait. There are some famous, fabulous buildings and developments.
We're happy to have you talk to us, and our audience is actually in person, if you're happy to do so, in one of our programs called Circle Talks, where we share our experiences or people who have a vast experience such as yours.
Okay.
Somebody might just get inspired and start something new.
Why not? Why not?
Thank you again.
That's always a success.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. Anyway, I enjoyed it also.
It was a pleasure. Yeah.